I have high anxiety that manifests itself like attention deficit disorder. I know, what a surprise. Hey, welcome to Dot Grid, a podcast at the intersection of analog and digital. I'm your host, Will Fenge, and I am joined, as I always am, by one of my internet best friends, which is a weird thing to say and probably comes off as super creepy, Mr. Andy Welfley.
Sup,
Andy Welfley, how are you?
I'm good. I have to say that as much as of a bromance as we may have, it is not nearly the intensity of the bromance between Mike Hurley and Brad Dowdy.
Oh my gosh. That is, first of all, if you haven't listened to, and we're going to do the show notes thing first up, if you haven't listened to episode 150 of The Pen Addict, I think there's going to be a link in the show notes, and it's definitely worth going to listen to. I think that they talked about hugging for probably a solid 5 minutes.
I think so. I think you're right.
And at no point did they talk about hugging Anna Reinhart, who was there with them and is probably a little bit more of an appropriate hug everyone all the way around. Maybe it was kind of a weird group thing. But I tell you what, they were both particularly excited to see one another.
It was amazing. That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really glad that the Kickstarter worked out for them and got Mike over here. I'm glad that he mentioned in the podcast that he's going to try to make it an annual thing. I don't really know that I had the understanding of exactly how crazy the Atlanta, and I realize this is all relative, but how crazy the Atlanta Pen Show was going to be this year.
It really seems like maybe it's the biggest in the country, at least that I've heard of. I know the LA Pen Show is pretty big, but it could just be because most of the people from our channels, kind of from our understanding, were at it. Whereas a lot of the pen shows are really, as they said, people who don't necessarily know what a podcast or a blog is.
Yeah, I feel like the Atlanta Pen Show this year, maybe every other year it's not a massive thing, but this year it almost became if you're in the pen community and you're tech savvy, then it was almost like a destination. People almost said, you know, this is going to be my annual trip to the Mecca. In this case, instead of Mecca, it was like NACCO.
I really wish I could have figured out how to go, but I could not get away. But I like to think that if we were to meet in real life, we would also have a lot of hugging.
I was going to say hug awkwardly for more than 2 minutes. Maybe so. I like that Brad kept saying, well, we kept looking at each other and
staring,
like, pinching
each other
and poking at each other to make sure this was really real. And I mean, well, you look, they're what, about 3 years in on this?
It's
and
true.
They've never met in person?
It's interesting because, like, you know, to me, like, you and Johnny and Tim are just voices on the other end. Like, I've video chatted with them before, but definitely, like, It does seem like it would be really weird to put, like, a real life face to the voice that you hear every week.
I'm not gonna lie, I have been knocking around the idea, the more and more I've thought about it, of trying to do the aforementioned, in a joking way, erasable get together thing here in Pencil City, USA. Because I'm like, well, I guess we could put up that what is that? A yurt in the backyard, and we can just have a bunch of people out, and we can do weird sleeping bags. No, we couldn't.
That would
do
be awesome.
That. Well, it would be fun, but we would probably literally fill up every hotel in Shelbyville.
Well, you know, the American Pencil Collector Society does a once every 2 year a biannual meetup, and it's a lot of, like, swapping of pencils, but it's definitely not. It's a much, much different crowd. Much like the pen show, I have a feeling that we would have a lot of just people who would not even comprehend what an internet radio show was. And there's really not, like, new pencil vendors. Like, Pencils.com or Notegeist would not go and, like, set up shop at the ACPS pencil show. Or APCS pencil show.
Something entirely different.
Exactly. We should maybe actually talk about what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, that's probably not a bad idea to go ahead and jump into this. We are once again brought to you by Notegeist this week, so we'll have a little bit more to say about them later.
Yay.
By them, we mean Gary and all of the fine people that give him a hand. But yeah, this week, Andy and I decided that we're going to delve into a topic that is always, it seems like one of those, it's my unanswerable question. It's something that I seem to always be picking some other way, form, or fashion of handling.
And I know that I've said this, I said this during the gift management episode, but this is something that I have been thinking about for a long time. And it is a little bit more conventional, I would say, than a than a GIF management episode.
Not that we don't have any...
Yeah, I got a lot of good feedback for that.
Yeah, and we got a lot of good feedback for the last episode, too, with Mike Rohde.
Yeah.
Again, can't say enough nice things about him and how gracious he was to sit down with us. I've actually – I went back and listened to the analog note-taking episode of Pencil versus Pixel that he was on with Joey Caffone. Mm. And I think see, here it is, me forgetting the name of the guy that does the dry erase notebook again. But that's actually a really, really solid episode, too, that kind of Pencil versus Pixel that rotates and kind of revolves around some of the things that you and I have talked about in the past, because it's all about analog note-taking.
Yeah.
But this week we are talking about analog and digital reminders and to-do lists and things like that, because there are so many digital tools out there. It seems like every time I turn around, there's another Kickstarter for some sort of analog system, whether it's bullet journaling or something like that. So you and I have kind of had this on the back burner for a little while, not because we didn't want to do it, but because it's a particularly daunting topic.
When I think of like my workflow, my productivity when it comes to digital or analog, I think the thing that I consistently am the most inconsistent about is my to-do lists. I really just like cycle back and forth between digital and like something on paper. It's so weird, and I won't like, and spoiler alert, I have no idea why. It's just something. Sometimes I feel like putting it onto my computer, and sometimes I feel like writing in my notebook or whatever. So I wish there was a good method that I really kept, but I don't.
No, and I'm the same way. We kind of had this in the queue and we were ready to go, and then the opportunity to talk to Mike popped up, so we put it back for a couple of weeks. Since we created the show doc, kind of the rundown to do this, I'm not even kidding. I have changed my currently using system 4 times.
Yeah.
Like just in the last month, I've gone back and forth between this system or that product or this app or, you know, this different notebook or what have you. So it's one of those things that much in the way that, and I think I shared that article with you. Did I share the article with you about Solarized and the guy that picked the colors for Solarized?
That was really interesting.
Yeah, and we'll put a link to it in the show notes too, nerduprising.co/.grid/8. It's almost like they talk about in that article where people get more caught up with the products that they're using than the things they're actually creating. And I feel like there are times that I definitely get more caught up in the system that I'm using and trying to perfect how I'm going to take care of this than I actually do accomplishing the things that are on my list.
I think it's just another kind of incarnation of, you know, being a tinkerer. Like, you know, I know that you like to play around with a computer and install Linux or make a Hackintosh or something. And I will do very similar things. I'll try out something new or just try to like modify something to see if it'll work. I think it's just kind of tweaking, and I'm not going to use the word life hack. I'm not going to use the word life hack. Hacking your life is something that's interesting and fun and really challenges your brain. The trouble is you're sometimes breaking the very thing you're trying to solve, which is to be more productive. And
I spent the first 30 minutes when I was home today trying to figure out how to sync my Sublime Text preferences between Linux and the Windows computer that I use. Why?
Yeah. Well, I think it was XKCD who had a really good comic years and years ago about nerds, and like they had like a line graph, and they showed the intersection at which the amount of prep time you take to figure out an automated way to do a very simple task will eventually, will eventually intersect and then stay under the amount of time it takes to do a task, if that makes any sense. I'll try to track that down and put a link in it. But it basically shows like, hey, people roll their eyes when, you know, we try to figure out some easier or automatic way to do something. But eventually, in the long haul, it's going to pay off.
We hope.
Yeah.
Or if not, at least we had an enjoyable time in the process.
Exactly. Yep.
Well, so, we're going to kind of knock back and forth between analog systems and digital systems and what we're currently using and things that we've tried, things that we like and things we don't like. I do want to preface this with the disclaimer. Nothing that we are going to say today is the definitive be-all, end-all answer.
Yeah.
Andy and I both use different systems from each other. We're both using different systems on a regular basis. If I ever find the perfect tool, I promise you, Andy, you'll be the first person to know. And then we'll make sure that we record like an impromptu emergency episode to throw up in everybody's podcast feeds.
Yeah,
I found it. I finally got it. So we're just going to explore some of the different analog and digital systems. We're going to talk about some of the things that we've used and some of the tips that we've got. And hopefully through going through all of these, something will ring a bell with one or many of our listeners. And they'll say, oh, I hadn't really thought about that. Maybe I'll give that a try, because that same thing happened to me here recently. I'm going to go first because I own the domain. That's a horrible reason to go first.
Should we talk about sort of the 50,000 foot view first? And
yeah, well, I like how you did a 50,000 foot view, and now you're going to talk about get things done, which is where you probably got the whole 50,000 foot view from.
Well, the first thing I was going to ask is, just point out is we both have jobs, and probably most people out there have jobs that are complicated enough where not everything we do can be actionable, cannot be summarized in a to-do list.
No, there are things that pop up on my to-do list immediate that I either have to do immediately or in the next couple of minutes that if I took the time to write them down, I could just go ahead and get them done.
You don't have like a to-do for like teach kids.
Right. I don't have a stand up in front of class.
Yeah.
Take care of this situation. You know, it's one of those I either do it now or it doesn't get done and it doesn't have time to go on a list.
Yeah. So what I would be interested to know is, like, how do you account for that kind of a thing? Like, where's the line between, like, task-oriented to-dos and, like, strategy or planning or something like that? I think probably today we'll talk mostly about that first kind of thing. But do you use any sort of a system that is like a to-do list but for that, like, broader strategy that you might do? In your case, lesson planning, strategy, you know, any of that kind of stuff.
I see. Here's the thing about my lesson plans, and seeing as how, and we can talk about this in a later episode, seeing as how I've made a major life change here recently, I feel completely comfortable in saying this. I write lesson plans every week, but the vast majority of the time, it's only a very, very, very vague kind of impression on the direction that I'm going to head. In case you couldn't tell by knowing me for as long as you and I have been internet friends, I'm not a guy who... I'm very much a, you know, do things now, ask for forgiveness later. I very much stand up in front of my class every day and have an idea of the standard I'm going to talk about or the lesson I'm going to teach, or maybe I have a unit plan saying, okay, I'm going to teach this novel right now. But so much of what I do, particularly with my first couple of classes every day, it's just, all right, this is what I want to accomplish. How am I going to get there? I want to say that my lesson plans are typically followed, but I like you and I don't want to lie to you.
What you're saying is, some children are left behind. sorry, I don't want to poke the bear.
Well, and that's...
I do want to give, real quick as an aside, you and another show on this network a plug. There's a new show called Flipped that there are three really amazing co-hosts. I listened to the first episode, and I know that the second one is kind of on the way, but it's an education and technology podcast. I know that when that kind of gets some traction and starts getting out, it's going to be amazing because I'm not a teacher, and I don't have like specific interest in technology in the classroom, but it's riveting. That first episode, people talking about their approaches, was so great. So good job for you for getting that off the ground.
Well, thank you. That's a really nice thing for you to say. No, Jacoby Young and Todd Crane and Katie Mouton are going to be the co-hosts on that. I do have a cameo, if you will, on the first couple of episodes just to kind of get traction. And obviously, I'm the big draw for the network. It's definitely not Mr. Andy Welfley. I have a podcast with thousands of listeners. It's me. So I kind of got in there to kind of get the ball rolling, but I really wanted the three of them with their individual sort of outlooks on things to kind of see how the three of them would interact. I have a tendency, I don't know if you've noticed this, to be a little bit overbearing when it comes to podcasts. I'm a talker. So I kind of wanted to make a podcast that I wanted to listen to, which I think is one of the reasons why this podcast that you and I have has been as successful as it has been, is because this is you and I making a show that if we weren't making it, we would listen to it. And I really want Flipped to turn out to be that kind of thing. So yeah, we have an educational technology podcast here on the network. It's Flipped. It's nerduprising.co/flipped. Check it out. First episode's there. Second episode should be coming out about the same time that this wonderful podcast is hitting your ears. So if that's the kind of thing you might be into, into, whether you're into technology or education or both or none of these, and you just like to listen to people with Hawaiian / Southern accents talk to each other. It's a really, really interesting interaction of three very different personalities and three very different approaches to teaching. So thank you for saying nice things about that podcast. I definitely didn't put that in the show notes for you to do. So that was super kind of you.
Does Jacoby have is that a Hawaiian accent?
No, I say that he's in Hawaii, but I don't think that's actually a Hawaiian accent. Okay. Dude is probably one of the most Midwestern people I know, which is kind of weird.
Thanks.
Yeah,
I hate gay people, is what you're saying.
Oh, no. See, I was gonna. He doesn't.
I do not.
He lives in San Francisco. You wouldn't survive. I was gonna say.
Some of my favorite sisters are gay.
There you go. That's a way to look at it. I don't necessarily have a strategy or a game plan when I stand up to do the things that I do on a day-to-day basis. Do I have – like, we have standardized testing that starts next week. So I have a list of standards that I have to cover every year and make sure my students know. And I have quarterly unit plans that I put out, so I have a general idea of what I'm aiming for. And I suppose that, A, I would probably be a better teacher if I stuck to my lesson plans. And, B, it's probably a good idea to have where I'm going every day in mind when I get started. We call that understanding by design. It's kind of beginning with the end in mind. I would probably do a lot better if I adhered to that more often. Mm-hmm. But a lot of what I do is very much by the seat of my pants. I mean, I'm working with 12, 13-year-olds every day. It's some days you get kids, some days you get adults, some days you get babies. So, I mean, I gotta show up every day prepared for just about anything.
I can't even imagine that.
It takes some getting used to. And then you look at my other job. My other job is either working on this podcast network, which is
Dealing with children.
Well, every once in a while, we try not to say mean things about Future when he's not listening. Yeah. But and then my wife has these small businesses with the styling and the rentals, and then the small business consulting that she and I are doing. And that is, I mean, you and I were talking in the pre-show. I came home tonight and thought I was just going to be able to take about an hour and get ready for this show. And I had to move some furniture and load the car and take apart a chair and put together another chair. And I wasn't ready for that. So, yeah, there are a lot of things when it comes to the to-dos that are just right there. I have a list of 5 or 10 different things that I have kind of not necessarily even on the horizon, even closer, things I need to knock out when I get a free minute. But so much of the stuff that I do is right there in my face. I don't have a choice of what to do right now. Like, this is what I have to work on.
So what system do you use to sort between all those projects and all of those, kind of the timeliness of your to-dos?
My timeliness, I should say. Well, yeah, I say I prioritize them, and this is going to sound horrible, and love my wife and I love my coworkers to death, but I kind of prioritize what needs to get done next based on who has nagged at or picked at me the most recently or with the most ferocity.
I mean, no, that's a perfectly legitimate system, I think. I definitely I report to a few different project managers at my workplace and on several different products. And usually whoever has bugged me the most or I think will bug me next is usually the one that gets done first. And it's – I think everybody works like that.
Yeah, no, right before we started the podcast, I got an email from an – I don't necessarily report to many project managers, but I am an itinerant teacher. So I teach at two different schools, but officially my job is through our central office because I work for the gifted department. So I have another supervisor through the gifted department who, and you and I have talked about this, who I've known since I was 7. She was my gifted teacher when I was in school. So she still kind of treats me like I'm 7 or 8.
Williams.
Well, which is fine because sometimes I still act like I'm 7 or 8. But I got an email from her right before we started recording the podcast that were like, where are your lesson plans for this week? So that'll be the first thing I do when I show up to class in the morning is go, oh, goodness, I have to make sure I get this box checked and these things sent over because it might be the week before testing and everyone in the school might be doing review lessons. But I'm going to make sure that I get this done because she is the one who is most likely to email me again repeatedly and or show up at my – well, I say my door. The classroom I have in my first school doesn't actually have a door.
Womp womp.
But I have to make sure that I get that done so that I don't incur more of her wrath. I'll just say that. But yeah, it's whatever's most recent.
We need more education funding for Tennessee. They don't even have doors.
Yeah, we don't have doors or shoes. So send your money to cash.me. because of the class that I teach, I'm actually in a semi-lobby that has been converted into a classroom. It's a pretty spacious classroom, but up until this year, my number of students at this particular school didn't top more than 20. So they've kind of stuck me in nooks and crannies in different rooms. The first year I was there, I was in an office with 14 students, 14 desks, my desk, 3 computers, a bookcase, and a cart for the projector. It was the room that had been the ISS room the year before.
Woo.
It is now an office for 3 people. So think about that. It's too much room to put 4 people in an office, but we had 15 people in there at once. So now I'm in a classroom, and whoever darkens my doorway the most recently is the person who typically gets their to-do checked off my list the fastest.
Well, they can't darken your door.
Well, they can darken my doorway.
Yeah, there you
go. There's a particular spot once you walk past the partitions that I know you're in my room.
So should we talk about some of the specific systems by which we track our to-dos?
Well, one of the most popular is probably the David Allen system of get things done. If you... dude, I've read the book or parts of the book, and like I get into it, and I'm particularly excited that he had a new edition that came out this year. Maybe listeners, you noticed that he kind of made the rounds between the podcasts. I saw that he did an episode of Systematic. Hmm. I know he did an episode of Mac Power Users, so we'll try to put links to those in the show notes. I've listened to the Mac Power Users episode, and it's a good one. But I think the thing that really hurt me when I was reading the book was I was reading the old edition. And I believe he was still referring to his Palm Pilot at that point. So there was a little bit of a separation, a little bit of a differentiation between what I was dealing with on a regular basis and what he was actually talking about.
I have to admit that I read the original book, but I mostly just listened to when Merlin Mann talks about him. Because I feel like Merlin just summarizes David Allen in a much more succinct way than David Allen does, if that makes any
David,
sense.
Yeah, David Allen has – I'm not saying that book could be a pamphlet.
Yeah.
But like I said, I would read the new edition, and I probably will just because summer's coming up. I realized that I only have 4 weeks left after this week.
Nice.
So I have 5 weeks left total, and one of those is standardized testing, which is stressful, but at the same time, probably the least amount of work I have to do in a week. So I'm almost there.
Be chatting on Slack for –
We actually won't be, because if the state finds out I'm using an electronic device in the middle of standardized testing, I think not only do they revoke my license, they remove one of my hands by force.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we had that faculty meeting this afternoon. It's tough. People have had their licenses revoked for discussing problems on the test in Chewies.
Oh, Lord.
After the test is over. They're serious about this stuff, man.
So one thing about David Allen's system, it's called Getting Things Done, or GTD, as they say. Is that they argue that everything can in fact be broken down into actionable tasks. So even if you are planning to, like, strategizing about something, if you're trying to figure out your plan to tackle something, you might call that a project. You would title that project strategic planning for product X, depending, of course, on what your job is. And so they argue that every single thing that you do is something that can be made into a task that will happen one after the other. And it's up to you to just, like, collect as much input as you can into sort of an inbox, then start processing that and then sorting them out into tasks. So a task could be something as vague as doing research about problem X, or something as concrete as look up this blog post. I don't know, something like that. So it's basically systematically breaking down each part of your process into a task, and then putting that together as a project. So, and then if you've done it right, by the end of it, you should be able to just cross everything off and it's done. It's particularly hard for me to think like that, just because I feel like I would be spending more time just processing the task than the series of tasks than actually doing it.
Yeah, breaking everything down to small actionable pieces.
Yeah,
is too much of a large, semi-actionable piece
and,
for me.
And allegedly, like, if you can do that, if you are disciplined enough to do that, you eventually just create efficiencies, and then that is just something you're good at, and it will, in the long run, pay off. But I feel like with GTD, you have to – it's like a religion. You just have to, like, stick with it. You have to be religious about it. It's
– You've got to be GTD. You got to be goddamn devout.
It's so intense, and I just don't think I can operate quite like that.
No, well
– It's fascinating, and I definitely have used parts of it. I think Merlin advocates for sort of a milder, less Rain Man version of GTD often. But yeah, I know that there are a few online systems out there. We'll talk about OmniFocus, I assume. We'll talk about things. But you can kind of use those as sort of a modified GTD system. And I'll look for it in show notes, but there's an episode of Back to Work, which is sort of one of my favorite podcasts, maybe the one that got me listening to podcasts again, where Merlin just really breaks it down and talks about it. It's fascinating. But
yeah. I would actually be interested in listening to that because I do like Back to Work. Yeah. I like Dan Benjamin. I like Merlin Mann. I like what they do. I would be interested in probably listening to that episode.
I'll track that down and link it in show notes.
Good, because I am at a loss for solid Back to Work episodes. And the thing is they've been doing that for so long. They're past episode 200 now, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
They're like,
yeah.
They're way in there.
And it's sort of, I don't want to say it's devolved, but it's sort of turned into a series of in jokes and
comic book talks,
parent talk, and like the Big Lebowski talk.
Well, that was their most recent episode, wasn't yes. it? They didn't at the movies over Big Lebowski. I thought you were going to say Germ Talk because yeah, they do the Germ.
That's
thing
often
too.
I think that they have such a tight knit following that most people aren't coming in for productivity tips anymore. Mostly, people are coming in for because like they feel like they know Merlin and Dan now as people. Oh man, I'm trying to figure out. There's going to be a Merlin Man meetup in San Francisco on Thursday at his comic book store. And I'm trying to figure out if I'm going to go to that. But
I think the answer is yes. I think what you should really try to figure out is what time you're going to be there.
I don't want this to sound creepy. I don't know.
It's
if
going
I
can, to, but go ahead.
I don't know if I can meet Merlin Mann. I sort of have like placed him on this pedestal of like this super nimble conversationalist, and just like all around super interesting guy. And I feel like if I meet him, it's not going to be like, I don't know.
Get him on the podcast.
My coworker has met him and goes to these things, and like Merlin has like talked to him and bought him drinks before and would recognize him on the street. And I'm just like, I don't know.
You're talking about our close personal friend, Jake?
That would be Jake.
Jake, he and Merlin are our homies.
Oh yeah.
So if you can't get Merlin to be on the podcast, maybe Jake can get Merlin to be on the podcast. That would be okay with me.
I'm just afraid.
I feel like I feel like he and Patrick Groen are like the kingmakers when it comes to podcasting. I'd be like, well, if you didn't have a whole bunch of listeners before.
So speaking of Patrick Groen, that's a really good segue into... Oh.
Yep, this is happening.
Sorry about that. Let's not even edit that.
No, we're going to leave...
I live in an urban war zone, everybody.
What is that going on outside your door? San Mateo is off the chain.
There was just a car alarm going off. Patrick Groen invented a system, and I'm going to let you talk about it because I think you know more about it than I do. A system called Dash Plus.
Yeah.
And that is our next kind of system of to-dos.
Dash Plus was kind of the first one that I sort of, I don't want to say messed around with or kind of tinkered around with. I guess I did kind of. I got onto the Field Notes bandwagon, I don't know, or I guess we're looking at just a little bit over a year ago. Before that, I was carrying Moleskine Cahiers kind of off and on for a while because I have high anxiety that manifests itself like attention deficit disorder. I know, what a surprise. But I have a really hard time keeping things in my short-term memory, so I would carry around a notebook to write things down just so I could remember them later, because it only takes about a half dozen times for you to forget something your wife told you before she's like, just Jesus Christ, just write that shit down. So I did, and I started carrying my notebooks around and things like that. And then I kind of got on the Field Notes bandwagon right about the same time that I discovered the Pen Addict, and then I discovered Erasable, which is another wonderful podcast with three great hosts, one of which you may know.
I hate that podcast.
Well, it's not for everyone. But I, about the same time I started carrying Field Notes, I stumbled upon the Dash Plus system, which is it's simple in a way that's not so simple, and that makes no sense whatsoever. So please allow me to direct you, A, to the show notes, where there will be a link to the Patrick Roan white paper describing it, and B, let me describe it to you now. Basically, it's I don't want to call it a stream of consciousness logging system, but every time you think of something that you need to remember, that you need to do, or that is, you know, worth writing down, you put a dash next to it. And then if it is something that you complete, you put a horizontal dash, or you pretty much make a plus system, a plus out of it, and that shows that it's done. Now there's also
so wait a second. So the first time you think of something, you're going to record it. You're going to put it into your notes. But then, like, every time you kind of, like, follow up on that and think about it, you put a dash?
No. You put the dash on it as you note it. And then as you write it down. And then as you act upon it, and there are four or five discrete actions that you can kind of do. If there's an arrow to it, I'm going to get this wrong because I'm not looking at the picture, which is a horrible thing to do. But I hate it when people type on podcasts. Andy Welfley. You can put an arrow to the right to show that it has been transferred. What I do is I use that as a transferred to another list. If I put it an arrow, make it that dash an arrow to the left, it shows that I'm waiting on somebody else to act on it. If I make it into a plus, that means that I've accomplished it. Sometimes I make it into a box, and that means it's not necessarily something that I need to do, but something that I need to remember. It's very – sometimes you can – a dash is very easily made into an asterisk as well. He's actually got a really cool little light bulb that he makes out of things for ideas. Like if I were to have an idea for an episode of the podcast and couldn't get to my phone fast enough, or because I was in an area that I wouldn't, I could just write down the idea in my Field Notes and put like a little light bulb next to it. But basically
– so everything is in one stream, like everything?
Yeah, everything is right there in one stream, whether it's I need to buy eggs at the grocery store, I need to remember this phone number, this is an idea I have for an invention I want to come up with, or my wife and I have an anniversary in 2 weeks, I need to, you know, buy this gift. Everything is in that one stream of consciousness, so you don't have to worry about, do I put it in this notebook because it's for Nerd Uprising? Do I put it in this notebook because it's for school? Do I put it in this notebook because it's for Three Small Dogs, you know, business consulting? It's just you have the one notebook.
This podcast brought to you by Three Small Dogs Business Consulting.
Well, no, not quite. Eventually. Yeah. Eventually, maybe we'll be making enough money to do that. Speaking of, we have very reasonable ad rates here at the Nerd Uprising Network. So if you're interested in advertising on this podcast or any of our other wonderful podcasts,
come on down. We're stacking them deep and selling them cheap.
I tell you what. I was asked recently if I sold used cars in my off time. You, sir, you could probably do the advertisements on the radio.
That is a terrible used car ad that they actually is like a Fort Wayne car lot. Does it has that as their like motto? Stacking them deep and selling them cheap.
Yeah. Oh, that's good stuff. It rolls right off the tongue. It gets stuck in your head. Now, that's really the point.
Dirk Walker, if you're listening, you know what I'm talking about.
In advertising or PR or marketing or anything, you know, if it sticks in your head, you've already won the hard part of the battle. but no, I liked using the Dash Plus system because the easiest part about it is it's all based on that one dash. And whatever you decide to do with the dash, whether you do it immediately or it's at the end of the day or at the end of the time period when you sit back and go, okay, this is my inbox. Because you know, you got that whole concept of I'm putting everything that I come up with into this one spot and I decide where it goes later. It's just this continuous stream of consciousness logging thing.
It reminds me a little bit of have you ever used a Word notebook?
No, but I think I know exactly where you're going with this.
Yeah, it's so it is a little cahier, like a field note or a Baron Fig. It's made by Word Period Notebook. They're really great. They're very high quality. The paper is ruled in a very interesting way in that it's lined, but there are little kind of ticks to kind of form a graph in case you wanted to go sideways. But in the very left margin of each page, there's a little bubble with a little tiny second bubble. Kind of looks like an eyeball with a pupil in it. And when you mark something down, you you fill out the outer bubble just to like make almost like a checklist. And as you kind of go through and fill stuff out, you can put one horizontal dash to just say that it's in progress or to indicate something, and two horizontal dashes to show that you're done with it. So it sounds like a kind of a simplified version of the Stash Plus.
Yeah, it's and again, there are many different ways that you can that I've seen this handled, that I've seen this done, and I think we should talk about bullet journaling next, because there's a little bit of an easy kind of segue from one to the other. But there are many different ways to use like glyphs and symbols and things like that, so that visually. And it kind of goes back to the sketchnoting a little bit that we talked about last week, that if you're a person who deals a little bit better with pictures than you do with just straight words, or you can look at a list. I mean, it's almost the same thing as, you know, writing something out in a notebook and then scratching it out in red pen or highlighting it or something else to show that it's finished. You're just using something that's a little bit smaller or all in one particular place. And bullet journaling is a good representation of this as well. That's Ryder Carroll, right?
I believe so, and I remember when they had their Kickstarter, and they did very well, I thought. And I never really picked up bullet journaling. I think it's just a manifestation of my inability to like stick to a system. But I definitely have seen it, and it's really interesting. And I have to admit that their website is one of my very favorite websites.
Oh my gosh, that's a beautiful website.
They did an amazing job. It's
even if you're not interested in the system, just go look at the website.
It's so cool. So this is my web development geekery coming out. They use different phases worth of scrolling, like some really cool parallax scrolling, to basically go through the various types of logging that you can do. You know, as you scroll each section, and they talk about like what aspect of this logging you have. They actually show you what it looks like in a little notebook on the side. And so as you're going, you can they'll highlight certain sections of it, like sub-bullet points or tasks or notes or events, signifiers, don't know what the heck that is, page numbers, etc.
Is it signifiers?
You are right, signifiers. It's a bandy table.
I am good at the words.
You would think I would be, because I write for a living, but
because you like, write short words.
Logging things, but also you can put like monthly calendars in there, daily calendars. You can migrate it. It even goes through how to migrate something from one journal to the next. It's really good. This guy really delivered after this Kickstarter. Ryder Carroll, I can't remember. I remember he was interviewed somewhere, maybe on the Pen Addict. I'm pretty sure he just sort of went to this full time after that Kickstarter, at least for a while. Is that correct? Do you remember?
Yeah, no, I heard that as well. Because the second Kickstarter that he had come around, he teamed up with, is it Leuchtturm?
Leuchtturm, I believe.
Leuchtturm,
yeah. How Johnny Gamber, who has a convincing German accent, how he's sort of like, said it works. So
spent a lot of time studying the Nietzsche.
Yes.
So I'm convinced that his German accent Johnny's is probably
he's really into eugenics. Like, you shouldn't listen to that episode. Sorry.
I get it. Oh, Erasable listeners, that one's for you. I actually started using the bullet journal when I stumbled across an article. And I will definitely put a link to this in the show notes, and I'm sorry I don't have it here for you to be caught up on, about a gentleman who is using what he called a hybrid bullet journal. So there were some parts of the bullet journal that he used. There were some things that he pulled over from Dash Plus, which, by the way, has an app that we're going to put in there too. That's a good connection there from digital analog. The Dash Plus has an app. But I stumbled across this this hybrid bullet journal, which when I read about bullet journaling originally, it sounded like a good idea, but I, like you, have a hard time kind of fully committing to a system. But the more and more I read about it, the more I was like, oh, you know, this is something that I, you know, may be able to attach to, something I may be able to identify with. And so I started to use that. And as you and I have been sitting here talking, I have My Kaye's here in front of me, as I mentioned on my last episode, and in my monitor stand, and I pulled out my old ones, which I, you know, very devoutly keep bound together with the Field Notes band of rubber, so that I know exactly where to look for them and what to do. And I was flipping through and looking at some of the old entries that I have and some of the old monthly calendars and things like that, and I realized that it's not so much that the hybrid bullet journal or Dash Plus or bullet journal or whatever I identified with those, but it's I've tried so long to attempt to apply other people's systems to the way that I work. And I think the best thing to do, and hopefully what we can help some of our listeners with as we're going through right now, is you need to take maybe you're the kind of person who, you know, maybe Trello will work for you. Maybe you're a Basecamp person. Maybe you can use the bullet journal system in a Field Notes or something else. Maybe that works for you. But if nothing else, take a look at multiple tools.
Yeah.
And see if blending them together works for you, because you kind of need to make a system. You need to find the system that works for you if you're really interested in getting it done.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the things getting it done. I didn't mean to do that on purpose. Sorry.
Copyright 2001 David Allen.
Yeah.
That's Merlin's joke always, because a lot of people associate GTD with him because he's such a proponent of it. But he likes to preface his talks about GTD with that short read.
It's his. It's David Allen's. Merlin just happens to be an apostle for it.
David Allen's world. We're all just living in it.
It's true. From 50,000 feet. You've got to find the system that works for you, whether it's a combination of things, which is currently what I'm doing and probably likely what you're doing as well. But you've got to find a system that works for you, even if it's a combination of things, because that's the best way to try to get things done. But I'm not going to go gospelizing on that just yet. I'll take a step back here. I feel like we've talked a lot about the analog systems that work. What are some of the and, you know, this is the heart and soul of DocGrid right here. What are some of the analog tools that you're using that you have found to be particularly effective?
Well, as I've definitely talked about this on Erasable. I don't know if we talked about it here, but I've recently sort of been getting into index cards, which is funny because I feel like index cards were some of the first tools that Merlin sort of became famous with.
The hipster PDA, right?
Yeah. He ran a website called 43 Folders, and oftentimes those folders were to hold index cards, so little folders. So I've acquired a few different kinds. I got some really cheap $6 cards from Target. I got these little slightly more expensive cards from the Mito store they're Japanese born. They're I think used as mostly like flashcards. But then our good friend of the network, Chase Nordengren, Nordo as he is called, sent me a pack of the dot dash cards made by Notco. And I'll talk about those in a minute. And then June Thomas, who's a listener of Erasable, who is amazing, sent me a sampler pack of a bunch of her note card or her index cards, because she's fairly obsessed with them too. So I've sort of been kind of going through them to see which one I like the best. And I haven't landed yet, but I really, really like the dot dash cards. So what I've been doing is each day when I go into work, I take out a new card. I write the date and the day of the week at the top. I usually take like a nice pen or something to make a horizontal title line, and then somewhere just right of center, I will put a line as sort of like a sidebar. And then I just put down the tasks I have for the day. I take my computerized task list, which is in Things, which we'll talk about, and I kind of figure out what I had scheduled for today. If I have any immediate things coming up, I'll look at the index card from last week, the last day, to see if there's things that I missed. So I'll take it as like maybe 10, 15 minutes just to transcribe that and to just kind of reflect on it. It kind of helps me slow everything down a little bit in my head. And so I'll just kind of work off that for the rest of the day. And then if I have a meeting where I'm capturing something, I'll put that on there. And then I'll use either the back of the card or the sidebar on the right to put any little quick notes that I have. I really like the system. I'm afraid that I'm going to need to reference something on a previous day that I will not have captured, and I won't be able to get to it easily because I really don't want to carry like a whole pack of these around with me. So I feel like the thing that I should do is probably just do the same thing but in like a Field Notes. So I'll have at least, 48 days worth of backlog, essentially.
Have you considered scanning them?
I have,
and I don't. I feel like I'm jumping the gun here. Going, hey, let's talk about this analog thing you're doing. But wait, digital.
Yeah, no, that's probably a really good idea. I have not, but I know a million different ways to do it. If I did, there's like, of course, Evernote. You know, just capture it with a camera. Evernote actually has a really good. Did we talk about this with Harry? Did we talk about the Evernote version?
Oh, the Evernote scannable?
Yeah, Evernote has their own scanning app now that just
interfaces. I just downloaded it last week.
Yeah.
Like I haven't I'm a ScanBot guy through and through.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just downloaded Scannable last week because we're starting to do more business stuff here.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, I should do that. I really need to get on the ball and do that. But so I really should be doing that, and just so I have it, I can just recall it pretty quickly. I don't know, that just that transition from analog to digital. Like I feel like I usually transcribe things the opposite way, which is maybe not the way most people should, most people do. So I record things quickly on into things. And then when I'm just trying to piece out what I do for the day, I just bring that out of the computer and onto my note card.
When you say into things, you mean things with a capital T.
It's confusing.
Things with a capital T. It is. Right. Thanks for that super clear and clarifying title there, publishing company of things. Well, and my question to you as you're considering going through this is, how often since you started doing note cards have you had to refer to an old note card?
Here's the thing, not often. Usually it's whatever note I had on the other side. Like – Here's an example. I needed to send you some things via United States Postal Service. And so I couldn't remember. I knew that I had your address somewhere, and I didn't want to ask you again like I always do. And so I went to find it, and I wrote it down on my index card on the back of it. But it turns out I didn't send it to you that day. So I just sort of put it with the other ones. And I know tomorrow when I send it, I'm going to be like, oh, crap. What is this address? And I'll have to go find that note card. And it'll be fine. It's just all on my desk. But I should scan it and therefore know right away what your address is. Or better yet, what I actually did is just put your address into my contacts on my computer.
Speaking of Cameron Bardell, Daniel Taub, that stuff's going out in the mail sometime this week. I apologize. it's been cray cray here at Three Small Dogs Small Business Consulting headquarters, trying to get everything arranged and situated. Speaking of the U.S. Postal Service, but the reason that I asked the question is the main thing I'm using Evernote for now, and I realize that we're crossing streams and we're talking analog and digital, fine. And we're kind of back and forth.
Yeah.
But the main thing I am using Evernote for now is what I call cold storage or an archive. The amount of times that I open up Evernote to look for something is just – it's tiny compared to the amount of time that I spend just throwing things into it.
Yeah.
Because here's a good example. Every time I know I'm going to be out sick from work, I have to request a sub. Because I have a job that requires someone to be in my spot every day, lest those children set fires or call each other names.
And they would, too.
And they would, and they do. The problem is when my job is posted, it is not posted at you are supposed to go to X middle school or you're supposed to go to Y middle school. My job, because of the way that I am hired and I am an itinerant, says that my job is posted through the Rutherford County Board of Education. So at least three times in the last 3 years, someone has picked up my job request and gone to the central office. There are no children at the central office, Andy. There's no one there for them to teach. But what happens is they go there and then my principals, or more appropriately, my school secretaries, think that there's no one there for me.
Yeah.
So every time I request a sub, I have a confirmation number. You know, the same thing you do when you pay a bill online or you complete a transfer from one spot to another. There's a confirmation number. I take a screenshot of that and throw that into Evernote via the Chrome extension that I have that'll take screenshots.
You put it into what we call the CYA file.
Yes, that's exactly the cover your ass file. It's right there. And the number of times I've had to go after that in the last 3 years, once. But the number of times that I would have regretted not having it.
And once is enough. Oh,
Yeah, once is enough.
Yeah.
Are you sure you requested a sub? Oh, yeah, I realized I woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning with a migraine, and it was everything I could do to sit up, stare at my computer screen, and essentially use my nose to tap out the characters I needed to request the sub.
Yeah.
But I'm glad it was there. And you know that you're going to need to look for my address or that one thing that, you know, Zuckerberg said to you in the hallway when you passed. Maybe he was calling you a name. Maybe he was giving you an idea. You don't know. at least you didn't knock him over this time.
Yeah.
You're going to want to remember that stuff, but the odds of you needing to remember everything you write down every day, not that big a deal. And the only reason I even say Evernote is A, I have yet to see them put a storage limit on the number of or amount of things you can put in there. And B, their OCR is pretty damn good.
It's really good. Yeah. It's comparable in my mind to kind of the Apple Newton store or handwriting recognition system, which is to say that it recognizes me, my handwriting.
Can we go an episode without you and the Newton?
Not yet. Why don't you and maybe the Newton someday
host a podcast?
Oh man, yeah. I want to do an Apple Newton podcast.
Oh,
who can I get to be on that? I don't need any more.
Maybe Stephen Hackett's got one. You guys could do an Apple
Newton
podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Stephen Hackett's pretty great. You guys could tear it up with that.
So we should also
that's the reason I suggest Evernote.
Because we're both members of the pen and pencil community, we should probably shouldn't go without mentioning indexed.ink. That's indxd.ink, which is sort of an online via a web interface to upload and log your various notebooks. They kind of go after the Field Nuts crowd with theirs, in that, you know, they make it easy to kind of like log and upload your used Field Notes. So check them out. Links in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll definitely have links in the show notes. I was listening to episode 149 of the Pen Addict on the way in this morning, which was Stephen Hackett in for Mike Hurley. He was there with Brad Dowdy having the discussion, and they actually were talking about this conversation. So we apologize if we've retread anything. But David Ray is the guy who came up with that. He got a little shout out there, and I would love to, you know, make sure he gets as much press as he possibly can, because that is really well put together.
Yeah,
It's one of those tools, and this is how I know it's good. It's one of those tools that once I saw that it existed, I was like, oh my God, how have I survived without this thing? Because and I've only got 5 or 6 sitting here stacked up, but you look at people like Johnny, how quickly does Mr. Gamber go through a Field Note?
Well, between him and his daughter, they go through one pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. He and Charlotte are just tearing through those Field Notes, but yeah. I mean, if you take the time and index just the important things you think you might need to go back to on Indexed,
mm-hmm.
Going back and find them is so much easier than saying, oh my God, I've got three or four from the past month with 48 pages each. I've got to flip through and find out where it is. I know I put it in a black one.
Yeah.
Like, I know I put it in a county fair. I just don't remember what county fair it was, what color it was, or what state it's from.
Right.
But if you take the time to index that, no pun intended, that's a good way to go about it.
Yeah. So we can probably skip most of the pocket notebooks, just because I feel like we've covered a lot of what it can do for you to-do-wise, or a lot of these listeners probably are very well acquainted with most of the pocket notebooks.
Well, before we get into digital notebooks or digital tools of any sort of significance, I think this would provide a wonderful segue into talking about our sponsor for the week.
Sure. Well, I do have one more analog thing to talk about, but we can do that after the sponsor break too.
Let's do that after we talk about the sponsor break, because speaking of notebooks, our sponsor again this week, and we're super thankful, our sponsor again this week is Notegeist. We're sponsored by a friend of the show and a shop you've heard Andy and I talk about before. Our sponsor this week is Notegeist. Notegeist is the online destination for your notebook and journal needs. You'll find a wide range of stationery choices in the shop, all handpicked for quality and value by Gary, Notegeist's proprietor. Andy and I are both big fans of what Gary is doing in his shop, and I think I've probably spent the majority of my supply budget over at Notegeist in the past few months. I mentioned last episode about all the Christmas gifts I bought over there, and Andy, I'm going to lie and tell you that you have a gift on the way from there as well. Notegeist has a great selection of notebooks and journals from Word, which we talked about earlier, Write Notepads, Palomino, and Blackwing. They also carry CR notebook wallets for those of you who want a lightweight carry for cash and a few cards inside a convenient notebook. Notegeist also has one of the largest and most varied selections of Field Notes brand notebooks, including a pretty spectacular selection of the older, harder-to-find collectible packs. Here in the recent past, NoteGeek stocked up on a few new products. They've now got Banded Apple Carnets, or Bandy Tapple, depending on which Andy Wealthy you are, in a few different sizes and styles, and arriving just in time for us .grid listeners. It's a brand new amazing notebook and journal line from Paper O, featuring everyday notebooks inspired by innovation and simplicity. They've also got some super beautiful paper blank journals in stock now, so go and check those out. As a special thank you to loyal .grid listeners, if you place a NoteGeist order in April and enter the coupon code .gridPC, so that's DOTGRIDPC for podcast, you'll get a shipping discount within the United States, and you'll get a free random Phil Notes notebook. With the selection Gary has stockpiled in his shop, that's reason enough to order before the end of the month. The discounted shipping is a sweet bonus, so if you're into Field Notes, this is definitely a thing you'll want to take advantage of. Excuse me. Whenever you're ready for your next notebook or journal, check out NoteGeist.com to get those notebooks and journals to capture life's moments. That's NoteGeist.com, and use the offer code .gridPC to get a shipping discount and a free random filled notes notebook. Our thanks to NoteGeist for supporting .grid and all of the shows here on the Nerd Uprising Network.
Thank you, Gary.
Gary, we're super appreciative. Thank you so much.
Did I tell you I'm going to get to meet him in a few months?
No, you didn't mention that. Are you going to Ohio? Is he coming to New York? Is he coming to you? How's that working?
Well, I don't want to give away his whole life, but I think he's coming out here. So we're going to try to hit up some of the various stationery shops.
He's completely taking away the Andy Wealthy tour of California from me, isn't he? You guys are going to go meet Jet Pens, and you're going to go are you and Barrelsheimer are going to all go get brunch? Is that how this is going to work?
Probably. I'm sure we'll just, you know, jet set across the bay.
I'm super jealous. We'll save some of the delicious food destinations for me once I make it out there. I'm going to have a little bit more free time here in about the next 4 or 5 weeks. Never know when you could get a random Facebook message from me. Andy Wealthy, I'm at SFO.
What are you doing tomorrow?
Pick me up.
I'll just order an Uber.
Can I have a Lyft? Is that okay?
There you go.
Can I do a Lyft instead?
If that works. Cool. So before we get into some of the digital systems, which, we really could seriously just split these podcasts like this into two podcasts, one about analog, one about digital. I'll just quickly mention this. Back before I really had to have a shared calendar, I really kept a paper calendar, and I was on the lookout for the perfect weekly planner.
Oh, you've talked about this before.
Have I?
The 43 folders and everything.
Yeah, on the show?
Yeah.
Okay. So I won't go into like posting it to 43 folders and, you know, getting a whole bunch of responses, but we kind of landed on a product made by Moleskine called the Planner Plus Diary, and it is, for my purposes at that time, and for you if you keep both a to-do list and a weekly calendar, perfect. One half is for the left side is for the week, your current week, and the right side is a big blank piece of graph paper for your to-do lists. And it was great. It was perfect.
And I will take a photo of the one that I am currently using.
Are you using one of those?
Well, I am.
Yeah.
The right side is not graph paper. It's lined.
Oh.
My wife for Christmas got me the, I don't know, I guess it's bigger than A5. So I guess is that A6 if it goes larger?
I think. No, yeah, A6 is smaller.
Whichever the bigger one is. The one that's approximately
A5 plus.
Five.
It's A5 plus.
A5 plus.
It's the A5S plus. Is what it's called.
The A5S. That's what it is. It's the one that's, I guess, 8.5 by 5.5.
Oh, yeah. Is it red?
It's not, because I have one of the special edition Star Wars ones.
Ooh.
My wife got me the one with Darth Vader on the cover that is the Scholastic Planner, because I live a bit of a Scholastic life.
Yes.
The bad news is it started in July, and I didn't get mine until December or January, so I lost a couple months in the meantime. But I'm doing something similar on a weekly basis to what you do on a daily basis, and that is when I go in on Mondays, I kind of look at my calendar for the week and some of the things I need to knock out. I write, you know, a couple little snippets about what my lesson plans are for each class on the left side where the calendar is, and then on the right side I kind of keep a running list of to-dos, or I like to call them to-dones, because nothing is more enjoyable than writing something on your list and immediately scratching it off.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I do that all the time. So I'll take a picture of the cover of mine and some of the inside pages. I really enjoy it. I have nothing but nice things to say about the Moleskine paper as far as pencil goes and fountain pen ink on top of that. You know, sometimes in the past, particularly with the snobs and like some of the communities that you and I are in, it's gotten a little bit of a bad rap, but I have nothing but wonderful things to say about it. I think that's a, it's a digital, not a digital, an analog tool that I love and cherish and am particularly fond of.
Yeah. Cool. So yeah,
let's talk, albeit briefly, because let's be honest, we have a list of 7 or 8 or 9 digital sort of tools or systems or apps here, but I don't think even if you combine the two of us together, we're using all 9 of them at once.
And so probably all of them
hit them pretty quickly.
Yeah, and all of them are probably like 60% the same.
They are.
And it's the devil kind of is in the details, or the what's the Shakespeare thing about the rub?
I don't know.
There's the rub. I don't know.
I feel like therein lies the rub.
Yeah, that works.
If only one of us was an English teacher.
One of us was an English lit major, though. So,
oh God,
I should have.
To all of our educators, either fellow or former, we apologize. let's talk about the ones we're not using before we get into the ones that we know a little bit more about.
So first of all, I should preface it by saying there are 1.5 billion to-do lists and productivity apps in the world. And I think
please don't search for to-do or reminders in the App Store, because you're going to end up with...
It's probably going to be an icon with a little check mark in the middle. I can't remember.
Yes.
Somebody once, I think it was Federico Vittici, downloaded a whole bunch of them and kind of like showed how he has like 3 pages of apps with basically the same icon on a different, like with a different
color. I've heard
color.
It discussed on more than one podcast, where if you want to create a to-do or a sort of reminders productivity app, it's going to have a check mark in it.
Yeah. So, how are we going to do this? Discuss the ones that we do use or the ones that we don't use?
Let's briefly mention the ones that we've looked at and we haven't settled on. And I use settled as a very loose term here because you and I are about as settled as it gets. I think you should start with Andy Do.
apparently I have muscle memory that when I'm typing Annie, I put a D in there, it comes out Andy.
Annie. As we're going through the list of digital tools before we started the show, I reminded Andy very, very subtly that instead of writing Any Do, he wrote Andy Do.
That's my own personal app.
And to be honest with you, that was the first thing that popped in my head was, oh my God, this guy's got his own app.
Do you remember the interview that I can't remember who did it with the CEO of Path? And he basically talked about how he had
two cell phones,
and on them he had basically like a homebrew productivity list. That's just my version of that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's fine.
His big thing was he had 2 cell phones, so he could always have one and stay on the offensive instead of the defensive. I'm just like, you're such a D-bag.
It was. And that's the unfortunate part is I feel like Path has such promise as a social network.
It's so pretty,
and we'll get into it. Well, you're not allowed to say nice things about other social networks.
Oh, anymore. It's horrible.
It's ugh, Path.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Hate it.
Anyway, Any Do.
So Any Do is one of them. Todoist is one that I've seen a lot about lately. I think that they've been successful. There's Trello, which is like a whole – it's a little bit more than a to-do list. It's like a project management system. We'll talk about other things that are kind of like that as well and maybe where the line is. But Trello is something that I just can't make work for my brain. So a lot of people just swear by it and think it's amazing though.
I used it and Asana concurrently for about 2 weeks.
See, they have the
opposite
problem.
They're very similar.
Well, they're similar in that they have the opposite problem in that like Asana, you have, it's too structured for me in that it's only task-based to-do lists. Whereas Trello is too broad in that you just have like these boxes that you can rearrange and put stuff in.
Do you know what's really weird about what is weird that I don't like about Trello? And this is the most asinine thing you'll hear all day. And you work with a bunch of hipsters.
Oh, I doubt that. go on.
I don't like the fact that to get through things in Trello, I have to move through a horizontal menu as opposed to a vertical menu.
So, you know, some people really like the H scroll, but I just don't. I just can't do it.
So that makes sense to you. Because like I look at Trello and I look at Evernote, and I realize that they are 2 entirely different products. But I've used them for similar things in the past, and that is kind of you have a big picture, and then it kind of begins to narrow down as you work your way down from section to section to subsection to subsection to task. And as I look in Evernote, I know that I can go from notebook stack into individual notebook into maybe a list within the notebooks that has tags into an individual note. But to do that, I can work in what looks like a standard file structure.
Yeah.
Which, again, that's an entirely different episode in and of itself. But
people,
Trello, when I've got to do lists, I go horizontally, and it drives me bonkers.
People just love Trello. Like, I know we've mentioned this before, but the This Is How I Work series on Lifehacker is one of my very favorite things. And if ever you want to kind of like peek in the minds of some of the most brilliant people, so many of them use Trello.
It's a good way to lose a couple hours in your day.
Yeah. Yeah.
To just roll back through that, because I agree with you. It's one of my favorite things that Lifehacker still does.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are very many people in there that are very much into Trello. I tell you what, if you want to try to figure out how successful people do things with to-dos and get a whole bunch of mixed messages, you think Andy and I are bad? Go back through this is how I work, or oh my gosh, it seems like everybody's doing something different.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Trello crossover, and there's a lot of, oh, I just use simple reminders on my iPhone, or there's a lot of plain text, and I'm not going to throw stones at that because that's what I'm doing. But yeah, Trello is super popular with everyone, and I don't get it.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the things that we do use. I know you put down, and I'll be interested to hear you talk about it, but the kind of native reminders app in iPhone. Or iOS, I should say. And then there's also an OS X counterpart. But
I wouldn't know.
Do you use reminders?
I do, and I use reminders for one of two things, or for two things on a very limited list, because I have a bunch of different things that I use all together.
I'll be interested to hear this
have an episode,
because I want to see if it's exactly the same thing I do. But go on. I'm sorry.
I assume it will be. I use reminders either. Well, I guess for three reasons. One, because it's very, very easy for me to enter in something via Siri. Mm. And then depending on how I've used, if this, then that, or anything else, I can sometimes have that transfer over to another list. So I do it for that. I occasionally use it for location-based reminders.
Mm-hmm.
If I know I'm going to need to get something the next time I'm at the grocery store, or if I know I need to remember to send this piece of paper via interoffice once I get to my next school. And then I use, and I'm going to go ahead and assume this is the same thing you do here. I have a shared reminders list with my wife that's typically groceries.
Surprisingly, that is not one of them.
Really?
My wife is pretty strictly... Well, she has like she found an app for her iPad that she does to-dos in, but she does a lot of like list making in notebooks. So,
okay. I say that, and I'm the one who uses reminders for the grocery list.
Yeah, I use
shared with my wife.
That's cool. See, we should do that.
She doesn't necessarily use it.
I use it for geofencing. So for like the best example was there was a pasta restaurant in Fort Wayne that I really liked, and. When I was not eating gluten, which is something,
that's a whole other episode.
Yeah, long story. But now I am. Back then I wasn't. There was a they had a gluten-free noodle that I was not very well advertised, and I always forgot about it and just got a pasta-free dish. So I set up a reminder that anytime I come close to that place to remind me that they do in fact have gluten-free pasta and that I should get pasta. And hey, it worked. It worked really well. So I use it for that. And then I also use it for timed reminders, just because like if I try to put something in things to remind me in 6 months to buy this when it goes on sale or something.
Right.
I know it's going to sit there in my inbox in things and bug me because I can't complete it out because apparently I'm OCD that way. Whereas in fact, if I put it in reminders, it'll just kind of hide there until such time as that happens and I can just, it just pops up. So I use it, for geofencing and then also for
long-term
timed reminders. But Siri entry is really good. You can actually take things and sync it with reminders, but I have not tried that yet.
I have done that with Fantastical. Calendars is another episode that you and I are probably going to cover. We've talked about doing that, in June or July, once we're far enough removed from this episode that we're not twitching over it anymore.
How do I get to be a big shot enough that I can get Fantastical to buy me a license for the OS X app?
Oh.
It's freaking $45. for a calendar app. And Fantastical is indeed fantastic, but...
It is. I like Fantastical, but it's one of... Well, and this is super telling. The only thing I have Fantastical for on my phone is for event entry. It's not my go-to app. I'm using Sunrise right now.
Sunrise is a good app, yeah.
I love Sunrise.
Let's put a pin in this.
And we're not talking about calendaring at all. And I can segue back. The reason that I use Sunrise is because it integrates with many of the to-do applications that I'm using. Like you can look at Todoist in there. Yeah. You can use it. You can look at Evernote in there.
Things?
Asana had some integration for a while. So that's one of the reasons why I use it is because it brings in all of my calendars, but it also brings in my to-do list so I can have that one central thing to look at.
Let's talk about Asana for a second. So and we'll talk about this in a little bit, but at the agency I worked for before moving out here, we use Basecamp pretty religiously for our projects. And we always talked about trying to move away from Basecamp or find something that works better or simpler or something. And there was a big push to switch to Asana. And I don't know what it was. I just didn't get into it. And I watched all these videos when people could get like all this crazy stuff out of Asana, but I just couldn't do it. We used it for a few kind of like sample projects. Do you use Asana?
Asana was the last thing I used before I switched over to the system I'm on now, which I guess really doesn't mean anything, but also means everything.
Right.
I really, really like it. I liked the way that I could separate things out into – like you can really drill down into individual tasks or you can have big overarching lists. I mean
– it's very, very to-do-based, more so than really any of these other project management things, right?
Well,
list and checkmark-based.
Yes, it's very much list and checkmark-based. I could have – again, I have a lot of different things that I'm looking at between the wonderful and luxurious Nerd Uprising Network. Luxurious is not the adjective I wanted to use there. between Nerd Uprising and the businesses that I help my wife with and work and then everything that I have at home because, you know, I'm 30 and I have bills to pay and we live in a house and everything else. So it was easy for me to separate one spot to the other because I'm – the kind of guy that if I have everything on one long list, I'm going to be more concerned with what I need to be doing at home or what I need to be doing for this when I'm actually in supposed to be in the mind mode for that.
Yep.
So it was easy for me to switch from one spot to the other. The problem was it was also very easy for me to get stuck on one spot or the other.
Yep.
I think they call them – what does OmniFocus call them? Perspectives.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So it was very easy for me to get stuck in one location or the other, and I still get – daily reminders from Unroll Me that I have unfinished tasks in Asana that I have since moved on to something else. And all it does, and of course, it starts with an A, so it pops up first and it reminds me that I have things that, according to Asana, I haven't done. I would be like,
shut up,
I've
done this,
but I don't want to log into you because you'll pull me back in.
So there's Asana. We should mention Basecamp probably, which is way more than a to-do list, but this is kind of like your archetypical project management tool. It's made by...
Is it like a mix of Slack and Asana?
A little bit. So basically what that is you have... There's like different sections within each of these things. So you start a project, and so in the case of my agency last, each project was each website we're building. There's a messages thread where you can send messages back and forth between yourselves and between clients. You can make private or public messages. You can basically just thread everything, and it intersects really well with email. So if your client doesn't want to log into this, they can just respond to an email. There's that. And of course, you can attach files to those and get deliverables and approvals, etc. There are to-do lists. So you can create lists, create to-dos within a list, create a deadline for each of those, and it will then remind you, and then assign a task to each individual person. There's calendars where you can have to-dos and milestones, which is sort of like once all these to-dos are done, this big milestone will be complete. And then there are notes, like almost plain text. They actually use – it's not Markdown, but it's called Textile. Are you familiar with Textile?
I'm not. No.
It's a Markdown variant. It's like a markup language. I think it's probably a little simpler than Markdown, but I just like Markdown better because I'm used to it. And so what's great about Basecamp is that all of these things are migratable. You can turn a task into a message thread. Like every single thing has a discussion thread that you can have So if you wanted to have a discussion about one particular task, you can do that. You can migrate things really easily from one to another. And they've actually recently, like in 2012, I believe, really revamped the way that that Basecamp worked. But before that, it had been the same for, oh man, like 6 years. In a good way, in that it was so good and timeless that they could do that. It was built. It was one of the first, I think, one of the first big things that was built in Ruby on Rails. And so it had a lot of really interesting, like, native Ruby elements. It was super fast, really good. I used it briefly in a lot of different ways until I came to that company, and we used it a lot. We basically lived out of it. So Basecamp's really good. I would not recommend using it just for yourself, unless if you had, like, other people you have to very closely collaborate with or stay on the same page with. I'm sure if we had time or the energy or the money, frankly, because it's expensive, we could run a podcast network off of a Basecamp account very easily.
That sounds complicated.
Yeah. It's it developed some efficiencies after a while, but it was pretty great. Basecamp's very collaborative. I would not use it again just for myself. But it's pretty cool. I have always thought, at least in the old incarnation of Wunderlist, they used to be similar to Basecamp, except instead of a web interface, it was like an app, right? And I think they've actually changed to more of a to-do list. Is that correct?
It very much –
it's still very collaborative.
You're asking, and it's something that we're currently using.
Well, you're the one who – had me use it.
Who forced you into it, I think, God. Is where you're going with this. God, Real Fengi, you're so horrible.
very collaborative.
It's almost strictly a list of things you can put check boxes next to.
Yeah.
But again, if you go drilling into the tasks, you can throw attachments on there. You can have comments in them. You can throw notes on them, things like that. The reason that I have so forcefully asked that we use it for Nerd Uprising is A, because up until about 4 days ago, it was the to-do list application I was using.
Cool.
And B, because it is so remarkably I haven't had three beers at all. So remarkably cross-platform. Because, and I've alluded to it many times within this very episode, that I don't use the same operating system that you do. Yeah. So things, is not something that I have access to on my computers. I have a Windows laptop that I use for work. I'm running Ubuntu on my tower at home. I have a Linux netbook that I kind of tool around with, and I have an iPhone. So I'm kind of in between all these systems, and Wunderlist is either web-based or has a native app for all of these things.
That's so great. Like being so ubiquitous like that is just shows the super hard work that they obviously put into it.
It's a plus.
It's pretty too, isn't it? Like you can change the background, and it's very attractive to look at.
And on top of that, they have made a great number of the features available in the free version, which I'm not against paying for apps.
Yeah.
Particularly services and things that I use all the time. I mean, you and I had the conversation earlier this week. I paid $3 for an AeroPress timer on Saturday because I make coffee with my AeroPress every morning and I enjoy having that time. Yeah, I could use Siri to do that, but I like having that app there because it's easy for me to open it up, hit the recipe, hit start, and I know exactly what I'm doing at what time, because first thing in the morning at 5:15, me thinking and hot water are not things that should go together.
I think that you have out-hipstered me. I have a coffee shop on the roof, but you have a premium app for AeroPress timers.
I have a premium app for my AeroPress timer. And I tell you what, I mean, the charger recipe that I made yesterday morning, really delicious with a little bit of hot water as if I'm making an Americano, really great. So AeroPress if you're not already doing that.
So can you I assume that it has different methods, like the inverted method in there too, right?
The great thing is it's got standard recipes, 2-cup recipes. There is a list of recipes based on the most recent National AeroPress Championships. Were you not aware of this?
No, I was. I'm totally aware of this, but
I am going to send you a link.
Hear somebody say it.
I'm going to send you a link to this article, and I'm going to put it in show notes. I read a really great article on Back Channel on Medium with the guy who invented the AeroPress.
He's so interesting. I read that. I wonder if it's the same thing, but is it republished from somewhere else?
I don't know. It's an interview. It's written in interview format.
He's so
it's the
interesting.
Same guy that made the Aerobee. The Aerobee.
Yeah.
Or the Aerobee, yeah.
It's so interesting because I always remembered like seeing the website. My sister-in-law bought me an AeroPress years ago, and I was like, this is really cool. And I went to their website because I needed to order a spare part. And like they also sold the how do you say it? Aerobee?
I say Aerobee. Aerobee is a town in Texas.
Yeah, it's sort of like how Frisbee was made by the guy who like he made like pie pan plates or pie tins, and he figured you could throw them really easily and they looked really cool, so he invented the Frisbee. It's so much like that. That guy is super interesting.
Yeah, and well, he's 75 and he still shows up to work and invents things every day.
Yeah. But we're not here to talk about
that. Really, really cool. But we're not here to talk about that. We're not here even talking about AeroPress. I don't even remember what we were talking about. Coffee's delicious.
We're talking about Wunderlist.
Oh, yeah.
Can I talk about things?
Oh, that's right. Because I out-hipstered you because I had that thing. You can talk about things. I own a copy of the iOS version of Things. And I'm going to be straight up honest with you. I bought it when it was free.
Yeah. Oh, no. Seriously. I
got it when it was free, and if I had OS 10, I'm not calling it OS X anymore. You've taught me things. If I had OS 10, I would probably pony up the money to use it on the computer because it's a really beautiful app.
It seems
really functional.
What's interesting is this is not me trying to sound hipster, but I bought this app like in
before
2000,
it was cool.
Yeah, in like 2007, I think. I can't even remember how I came across it. Maybe I read about it in 43 folders, but I had a little money through the small nonprofit job I had to like spend on software. And we were looking for like some nice computer to-do lists. I bought like my own license, as part of like a 3 license pack kind of a thing. And so I've had this license of Things for like probably almost 6 years. And it's sort of just kind of gone with me from place to place. Cultured Code, who makes it, is just like a fantastic company, and they put out. I'm trying to bring up their website to see what else they make, but they came out with an iOS version when not too long after the App Store got opened up. I think they only make Things now. They used to make a few others, I believe, but
if it pays the bills,
yeah, it's just a really good. To-do list, and it can be as simple or as complicated as you like. You can just have basically like one stream of to-dos. You can separate them out into a today view. They have something they call focuses, which are basically like perspectives, I guess. You can kind of string or aggregate to-dos, so one is dependent upon the completion of the other. You have different boxes like scheduled to-dos, so you can set something to be due today, tomorrow, in a week. And then you can set that to appear automatically in the today box at a given number of days before they're due. So like 1 day before they're due, 3 days before they're due, so they show up. You can have different boxes called like someday, which basically just every once in a while we'll stick it in there for you to look at or be reminded of and get done. And you can separate that things out into projects. So a project is sort of like this master to do with like little sub to do's in it. I actually use this, I use things to sort of separate out all my various streams. So I have like, you know, different products I work on at work. I have my personal blog. I have my content strategy blog. I have my abandoned pencil blog. So I can just kind of come up with something quickly and stick it in there. And it has universal key commands. So wherever I am, I can hit control, command, space to make a new to-do. And it has like it has tags. You can tag stuff. It has a notes section in which you can... what am I trying to say here? You can drag an email to the notes section to make a link to take you back to that email to reference something. It's just a really nice, robust app. And it is not cheap. It's not as much as Fantastical, but I'm trying to remember. So on iOS, do you remember how much it was on iOS?
I think before I got it for free, it was $9.99.
Yeah. Oh man, on OS X, it's $50. Jesus Christ. I feel like I didn't pay that much for it back in the day. But it's a nice app. They'll let you keep updating and updating even when they come out with new versions of it. So that's really nice. I paid for mine back in 2007, so it's basically like I got it for free. It's just that I can't get it through the App Store. So they have a pretty robust way to update from the app, though.
That's good.
So we'll have links to the Mac and the iOS. There's a separate iPhone and iPad version. We'll have links to those in the show notes.
So expect three different links.
By the way, probably in the interest of full disclosure, most of these apps are via affiliate links. So if you are interested in purchasing one of these apps to try, please do so through our link because we get a little kickback. It's not much, but it's enough to kind of support the show. How much do we make? 38 cents through?
38 cents off of the Amazon book.
Yeah.
It's really pennies. It doesn't cost you anything else, but we make a couple of pennies off anything that you buy through Amazon affiliates or through App Store affiliates.
It's a good way for us to know what you guys like, basically.
And it pays for the shipping, for the giveaways and things like that.
It pays Will's salary.
Yes, it pays my massive
38 cents at a time.
Astronomical Nerd Uprising Network salary. But yeah, so if there are links in the show notes, please, please, please use those to go and pick up some of these things that you may be interested in. I think that it's an interesting difference between you and I that you use things, which, and I'm going to use your word for it, it's a very robust app with a lot of different features and selections and different ways that you can kind of lay things out and put them on this list or that list or tag it with this or shuffle it here and have it show up then. And I have currently gone the complete opposite direction. And I am currently going with a system that's a little bit more, we'll even call it Merlin Man-esque. I am doing everything through plain text right now. I tell you what, that's how confused I am about how I came up with this. That's how flabbergasted. That is what flabbergasted sounds like, ladies and gentlemen. I actually pulled a productivity hint tip workable workflow from my wife. Uh-huh. Yes, from my wife. And I am keeping all of my to-dos in a plain text file right now.
Huh.
She keeps one file in Simple Note. Full of, and I say full, and I mean full, because she's doing a lot of things. There's just like a double space in between the I need to get this done today and I need to do this someday lists, but it's the easiest thing for her to keep up with. And I looked at that and was kind of inspired by the fact that she gets more things done than any human person should get done in 3 days. She gets it done in about 4 hours. So I was kind of inspired by the simplicity of the way that her system works, because as you and I talked about what feels like 7.5 years ago now at the beginning of the episode, we spend a lot of time pouring effort and energy into finding the perfect tool and not as much time getting things done. And she spends a lot of time getting things done because she has the simplest system. So
my partner is exactly the same. She, you know, has something like a system that I sort of look at and I'm like, oh, I can't believe you're not integrating this and this. And hey, you know what? She crosses stuff off that list.
Yeah. I was like, hey, or I think we should try to do Trello, or I think we should do Asana, or I think we should do that. And she's always, nope. Oh, okay. And then she keeps doing her list and I see her do more things and I see myself, you know, installing this app or moving this app, or does it work with my Android tablet, or does it work on my phone, or what's the easiest way for me to get to it through the firewall at school? And I'm like, she's just got some plain text stuff that she keeps synced through Simple Notes. So it's not even Dropbox. Like, it's not even saved on other computers. Like, it's simply the Simple Sync system or whatever the Simple Note backend is called. And it's all just saved that way. And it's 99% on her phone.
Well, so in the grand tradition of making simple things like plain text more complicated, how do you actually create those plain text files?
I am currently using... depending on which platform you're talking
to. See, it's like
about.
Now we can talk about something as simple as plain text, but yet we can like sweat over the millions of different ways you can create it.
That I've overcomplicated, and I've actually been playing with it while we've been talking. I am using Sublime Text 3 on all of the computers that I'm using, and I use a program called Draft, which you and I have talked about before, on not Drafts, for iOS, but Draft for Android. I use that on my Nexus tablet, and I use Editorial on my phone. But the reason I use all three of these is because it allows me to access a plain text file in some shape, form, or fashion or format that allows me to do certain things with it. Right now, when I'm looking at my to-do list in Sublime Text 3, I'm using a package that I've installed called Plain Task, which is very reminiscent of Task Paper. Are you familiar with Task Paper?
I am familiar with Task Paper.
It's very similar to Task Paper, where everything has a checkbox next to it. I have everything. It's one text file, but I have everything separated into lists for school and home and Nerd Uprising and Three Small Dogs and Elizabeth Ulrich Design, Stockroom Vintage. Those are her other businesses. So depending on where I am or what perspective I'm in, I can either open or collapse.
Can we talk about the Gilmore Girls real quick?
You can talk about Gilmore Girls all you want to. I have a weird reference to that I'll talk to you about in the after show, but I think about Gilmore Girls and you and coffee on a semi-regular basis.
So you know Kirk from the Gilmore Girls?
Who I don't. Just like, I've never seen a single episode.
What? Okay. Okay, dear listeners. You guys know Kirk from the Gilmore Girls if you watch it. He's the guy who has like a million different jobs working at whatever like little business exists in the small town of Stars Hollow. Will is basically the internet version of Kirk.
I diversify my income.
Now you have to go watch Gilmore Girls so you can understand.
I do. Is that
if
Netflix,
I'm giving
Hulu,
you a compliment?
Netflix. Netflix.
Okay. You can decide whether or not I'm paying you a compliment or an insult.
Well, my wife and I are always looking for a new show to start from the beginning. We're finally, as of last night, are caught up on SVU. So we'll. I'm sure she won't argue with me about starting.
It's a
Gilmore
little Girls bit different than SVU.
I would imagine so. I would imagine there are women in both shows, and then I think the similarities probably end.
The grisly murders in Gilmore Girls don't happen until the end.
Oh, well, there you go. No, I have something to look forward to. But I have Plain Task saved here, or it's a package that I have in Sublime Text, but I also use Sublime Text for doing my Markdown writing and everything else. We did an episode on Markdown. You remember that?
We did. And we should do a follow-up sometime because I have some new developments in Markdown.
Behind Aaron Draplin, still our most popular episode.
Huh.
Okay. So Markdown, it's a thing that people are really into, but I use it to do my I use Sublime Text to do my Markdown writing. I use Draft to do my Markdown writing and my plain text editing on my Android tablet, like I said, and then I have Editorial for iOS.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely think that it would be a good idea for you guys to check these tools out if, you know, plain text is something that you're interested in. I find myself, because I can't overcomplicate it, and trust me, I'm looking for ways, but because I can't overcomplicate it, I do find myself getting more things done because there's less things standing in between me and the stuff I'm trying to accomplish. I mean, we're using Wunderlist to keep a track of show ideas. I still have my field notes in my pocket that I write things down on. Yep. Because I still find it to be a little more socially acceptable to take a notebook and a pencil or a pen out at a meeting.
Yeah.
Than to take my phone out because people just assume that I'm using the Snapchats or the Twitters.
Playing ever. Tetris or something.
Well, still stuck on Crossroad. Can't get above like a 12 on Crossroad.
So like what we mentioned before is there's a million different tools to do this. And if you are somebody who's lucky enough to know the sort of thing you want to do to make it productive for you, like send us a tweet or something and we can probably we are by no means any sort of an expert in all of these things, but I'm sure we have enough kind of collective knowledge between us to say, hey, this is what you should be looking at, or this over here, depending on how simple or complicated you want to get with it. So,
yeah, we love to tinker, so we've got at least a cursory knowledge of most of the systems and popular tools that are out there.
There are entire podcasts dedicated just to-do lists. So, and they're not just ones that are allegedly about productivity that get into like comics and parenting and Big Lebowski.
Germs.
Like, which I mean, it's still a fantastic podcast and you should definitely listen to Back to Work. But
they have a rapport that the likes of which, you know, I rarely see replicated anywhere but the Nerd Uprising Network.
Well, like when I say like workflow, that's ripped directly from Merlin Mann. Like, I don't even apologize for that. And like, I sometimes will talk about like sending somebody a tweet because Merlin says that. And all of like my little like podcast ticks in my head when I podcast, it sounds like Merlin Mann.
I'm putting this show out on Wednesday solely for the sole reason that I want every one of our listeners to either tweet or email you and peer pressure you into going to this thing on Thursday. I want all of our listeners to want you to do what's best for you and to go do this thing. So I'm going to publish this episode a day early. I'm set it here on the internets, although I am the person in charge of editing, so I can always cut this part out. But I'm saying it here. I'm going to do this out early. I think it's something you should do. It's even if you just get to be in the same room as your hero or your your wannabe mentor or whatever, yeah. Even just to be to have that opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about how much we'd hug each other. Imagine how much you would try to fake hug Merlin Mann. He might have to get a restraining order.
It's amazing, like, when you live in Indiana and Merlin Mann lives in San Francisco, how easy it is to be like, oh yeah, he's just this guy on the internet. But now when I don't live in the same city, but I live within like 40 minutes of him, it's much harder to like keep those things kind of compartmentalized.
No, I agree. I had the same sort of, well, probably not to the extent that you do, but I had the same sort of moments with being able to sit down with Mike Rohde and you and I being able to talk to Aaron Draplin. I mean, that was one of those things that was like, what is this? That is this amazing. Happening right now? Yeah. That was a great thing. I was happy to have him on. I'm hoping we can get him back before the summer edition comes out. But that's pipe dreams. Yeah. Peer pressure, folks. If you're going to tweet at Andy, maybe you tweet at Draplin at the same time and be like, hey, thanks for being on Doc Grid. Which you can reach on Twitter at Doc Grid Podcast, by the way. Speaking of Twitter, Andy Welfley, awkward segue.
Uh-huh.
If we wanted to get in touch with you on the Twitters, which I don't have to, I have about 13 different ways to get in touch with you, not including the United States Postal Service, which you and I will both be taking advantage of this week. How coincidental was it, by the way, speaking of field notes, that the field notes you wanted, I have in front of me.
It's amazing. It works. Hey, that's awesome. Yeah.
Thank you, Gentleman Stationer Joe, who hopefully listens to the podcast and now has gotten his shout out. Oh, he has things for us. I need to meet with him before I send your package.
That's awesome.
Because Brad and the rest of the guys over at NotCo, or the rest of the folks over at NotCo, apparently sent us some treats back from the Atlanta Pen Show.
What?
So yeah, something about notebooks or something. I don't know, but I think I'm going to send you a whole handful, and then you can work on disseminating them to the wonderful gentlemen that work with you on the Erasable podcast.
We should do a crossover sometime where we all just get together and talk about something. I don't know what.
We can all get together and talk about journaling.
Yeah.
So, that sounds like a wonderful idea. But anyway.
So you can get internets. Me. You know what? Don't send me a tweet. Send me a yo. I'm on yo.
Yo, just yo, right at Andy.
Find me yo at Andy W, I believe is my yo name.
Yo.
No, my Twitter account. Do you watch, probably not, Silicon Valley?
That's one of those I need to jump back into.
Oh, it's so good.
Giant penis Joe.
There's an episode, actually this week's episode, that there's a new social network called Bro. And you can, you just send people bros. They can bro you back. They, bros disclose.
That's, bros disclose.
That's my takeaway. You gotta keep your bros in the loop.
Yo.
Anyhow, my Twitter account is awelfley, AWELF as in Frank, LE. And, I am, yeah.
Andy at woodclinch.com.
Andy at woodclinch.com. And
if we're doing emails,
yeah.
If it's like 1997,
I don't know how to do email. Send me a fax.
Fax you at 614-28-17-9-er.
Yeah, that's it.
Six.
Yep. How about you? How do people get a hold of you?
Oh, goodness gracious. There are many ways to get a hold of me. The best way to do it is probably smoke signal, but on the rare occasion that it's windy where you are, I'm also on Twitter at WILLF, also like in Frank, ANGUI, that's Will Fengi, at the Twitter. You can tweet at @DotGridPodcast. That'll bleep and bloop and bling on Andy's many digital devices and computer screens as it will mine, and then we will race to see who can tell you nice things quickly as possible.
You're please real, tell real us, quick on that.
Well, I get bored at work because I'm not very good at my job, so I just keep the digital tweeter windows open and just immediately jump on it. A lot of times I'm just taking sick days because I have them and I'm not going to use them anyway. So, again, really, really bad at my job. So I'm hopefully, if any of my future potential employers is listening to this, you can tell that I'm being sarcastic. I love my kids and my job and making money. So please, please, please tweet at us either individually or at the podcast. Again, it would behoove us to mention cash.me/#nerduprising. If you wanted to send us a dollar or two, that would be great. It pays for shipping for the giveaways and my meager salary, which again is a joke. I'm not making any money for this. We do this gratis because we love you.
Remind us, though, what you do to get the discount from NoteGeist.
Oh, yes. Please, please, please make your way over to NoteGeist.com, NoteGeist.com, and use the offer code DotGridPC. That's PC for podcast. You'll get a shipping You'll get a discount on United States shipping and a free random Field Notes notebook. Gary has been super, super generous. There's already been a couple people that have gone over there and placed a couple orders from the episode we did earlier this month.
Oh, awesome.
And he's been he's been super happy about that, and so are we. That's the best way to support our podcast, is not just to send us money directly, which is great, but to go and support our sponsors, because Gary's doing wonderful things over there. So please, please go over and support Gary and support Nerd Uprising and Dot Grid in the process. Andy, we have rambled on for an extended period of time, but it's really been an enjoyable discussion. I am completely more confused now than I was at the beginning, and that was kind of my goal.
That's what we're here for.
So if you're at all interested in telling us what kind of systems you're using, or if you're interested in telling us that we're completely wrong and that we should be doing something different, please don't hesitate to tell us. We love to hear feedback. We do it because we enjoy talking about these topics, but we really love talking to you. So please, please, please get in touch with us. In the meantime, between now and when we sit down again, Andy Wilfley, I hope that things go well for you. Send me some things. I'll send you some things. Maybe some multicolored pencils.
Hey, that sounds good. I bet I have some of those.
Yeah, I'm sure if you dug through the vault, you could find something fancy.
Awesome.
All right, man. Yep. It's been fun.
Yeah.
Thank you again, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you guys in a couple weeks.
See you later.